I was like, you know, let the blessings come. The Bible says we have not because we ask not. So I think that it would definitely benefit a lot of people if they knew that it really existed and it's really a real program.
Right.
This is not no show story. This is a real story. This program changed our lives. What I thought would be the coldest winter ever, it wasn't.
This is for the culture. That's right. The vendors up the fly, and you know it. That's right.
Hello, everybody. Everybody that's listening, all of you from Newark and beyond, welcome to episode 3 of season 3 of Rising 60 with Desiree Hadley and I.
Yes, I'm excited. It's going to be a good show today, Mayor.
Yeah, on this episode, we expand on the topic of guaranteed income. Newark's guaranteed income program is called the Newark Movement for Economic Equity. We discussed this topic on my Facebook Live show once in conversations with Mayor Baraka. Economic equity is critical in urban communities like Newark. And according to the U.S. Census Bureau, the median household annual income in the city of Newark is about $37,000. As you can imagine, trying to live comfortably at this income level can be tough. The reality is that a large percentage of people cannot afford basic necessities, and the pandemic has exacerbated that. Our first guest is a friend of mine and former mayor, Michael Tubbs, of Stockton, California, currently the Special Advisor for Economic Mobility and Opportunity to California Governor Gavin Newsom, and the former mayor, as I said, of Stockton. Mr. Tubbs will join us virtually, where we will learn more about him and the guaranteed income program that he actually started, that is now spread all over this country. And we also speak to our philanthropic liaison here, Kevin Callahan, and the program manager of Newark's Guaranteed Income Program, Kalina Berryman. I don't believe that she's with us today.
No, she's not able to join us today, unfortunately. But, you know, maybe we could have her on a future show.
Yeah, we'll make sure that happens. And, mm-hmm. You know, people are working with the Newark Movement for Economic Equity. And we'll conclude our conversation with a brief discussion from one of the participants who share their story with us. It's going to be a great show.
Yes, I'm excited about today's show. So as we always do, we're going to go into some Newark news. Lately, a large portion of your focus in Newark has been around the conversation of equity, economic equity, education equity. And you were recently in a fireside chat with New York City Mayor Eric Adams. And I watched the fireside chat via Facebook. If you haven't, you definitely want to check it out. It was a great conversation. And some of the things that I'm going to go over, some of the things that kind of stood out to me with that conversation. Yeah. And one of the things you did, you stated how diversity is the expansion of democracy, and how in Newark you are intentional about encouraging diversity in leadership roles within your administration. You also mentioned the deliberate and intentional disinvestment that happens in communities of color, and you think that needs to change. I really agree with that. And one of the other points you made was you talked about the New Jersey having the largest wealth gap in the country.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't know that.
Yeah.
You know, it's not hard to believe, you know, just driving around the state, I mean, or even the county, you can see the disparity. You know, with the 20-minute drive outside of Newark, you can see the economic difference. So, you know, staying on the topic of the wealth gap in New Jersey, I'm going to go over some numbers. According to the New Jersey Institute of Social Justice, their newly released research states that the median household wealth of white families is $322,500 compared to just $17,700 and $26,100 to black and Latino families. That's a huge gap. That's a huge gap. So the wealth gap definitely directly correlates to our conversation today. We're talking about the Newark Movement for Economic Equity. And it does relate also to programs that Newark has in place, the Section 8 home ownership program.
Right.
Newark is actively trying to close that wealth gap, right, Mayor?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, the wealth gap is, you know, fueled by housing for the most part.
Right.
In New Jersey and around the country. You know, housing in America is home ownership is the real foundation of wealth.
Right.
Property ownership. Yeah.
Right. And Newark is definitely trying to reverse that.
Yeah.
So I want to briefly talk about the conversation you had with Mayor Adams. What was one of the takeaways from that fireside chat you had with him? You did very well on that as well. I mean, I was listening to it. It was good. I was like, wow, the mayor made some great points.
Well, no, I just think that, you know, what we're struggling with in Newark is not germane to the city. And a lot of people think, oh, maybe just Newark just dealing with these problems, that this is a national issue and cities as big as New York City are dealing with some of these same issues, in their city. And our way to navigate around this and mitigate some of these things are similar. Right. Like mayors are talking to each other, trying to really figure out what needs to happen. And which means that it goes well beyond just who's in charge, which makes an incredible difference, that's for sure. It's some systemic things that are happening that right. needs to be addressed.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right, so we're gonna move along to the education equity discussion. So on Friday and Saturday, you held yeah. a conference, right, around education equity. So I took one of the quotes from your press release. You were quoted saying, I'm gonna read it really quick. It says, you were quoted saying, schools are a microcosm of broader societal issues. We have to remove these societal barriers that impede on students' learning and holistically change the system to enable them to achieve personal success.
Yeah.
This conference is about getting all stakeholders together and collectively finding solutions. We will turn discussion into urgency and urgency into action.
Yeah, shout out to Dr. Brown, too,
and
the folks who put that together. The mm-hmm. conference was amazing. If you missed it, you know, you should follow up and see how you could be involved in some of the after post
right.
kind of organizing that's going on. And definitely for the next conference, because that conference was really great. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, it just means that the school system, the schools are tied to the larger society. You can't divorce schools from the communities that they're in.
Right.
You can't, like, purposefully undermine and hurt families and then expect their children to be successful.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So I want to ask one more thing about this this topic. So what is the overall goal for the educational equity conversation?
Well, like I said, to get people moving
mm-hmm.
in the same direction, to remove some of these barriers
mm-hmm.
that inhibit, you know, particularly black and brown boys from finding success.
Mm-hmm.
In the school system, in the city of Newark, in the state, and trying to get these barriers out of their way, recognizing that the barriers that exist in the state and that exist in the school system.
Absolutely.
Period.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, creating a universal entry point for all of our students.
Absolutely.
You know, definitely.
And if people miss that conversation or the conference overall or some of the workshops, if you want to catch up and see what we're talking about, you can definitely see it on the Facebook, City of Newark's Facebook page. All of the content is there. And it'll be reposted on other social media platforms as well and on Newark TV. All right. All right, Mayor, you want to go into recommend on the first guest?
Yeah. First guest, I believe, is Michael Tubbs, Mr. Michael Tubbs, who is joining us remotely from California. The former mayor of Stockton, as I said, California, is now special advisor for economic mobility and opportunity for California governors, Mr. Tubbs, you know, the California governor, Gavin Newsom. Mr. Tubbs was Stockton, California's first black mayor and the youngest mayor of an American city. He was elected at the age of 26.
Wow, that's young.
That's
very young.
The Baltimore mayor is young too. He was in his 30s, but Tubbs still was 26 when he started out.
That's extremely young.
And had a deep impact nationally. I mean, a lot mm-hmm. of mayors much older than him look to him for leadership, which says a lot. And you know, the Mayors for Guaranteed Income was started by him. I was one of the first cities to jump on that.
Wow.
With Mayor Michael Tubbs, and I respect his leadership
mm-hmm.
then and especially now and all the work that he's doing. So this is an opportunity to hear directly from him, which I'm excited about. You know, talk about guaranteeing income is the disbursement of direct recurring cash payments to residents with no strings attached. So I want to welcome to the show, you know, Michael Tubbs, Mr. Tubbs, Mayor Tubbs, in my mind.
All right, how you doing, Mr. Tubbs?
Good, brother. Good to have you on with us, man.
All right.
Yeah.
Before we start the overall conversation, can the both of you just tell everyone who's listening or watching how the two of you know each other?
Who doesn't know Mayor Baraka? He's a legend.
Right.
He's not even a politics person. You like hip hop. You know, like you study Black history like him. And his family have just been so important to the, not just the struggles, but the way Black people in this country have fought for more justice and more opportunity. So by reputation. And then I remember watching the series, he was still a principal at the high school. So he's been something I've known from afar from a long time. And when he was elected mayor, there's like marriage or like a fraternity and sorority. Like we just all seem to know each other and all seem to get along. Wow. So that's how I met Mayor Baraka.
That's right. That's right.
Amazing. That's dope. I like that.
Yep. And I told y'all Mayor Tubbs was, you know, kicking butt when he jumped in there, you know, and became a national leader very quickly.
Wow.
Yeah.
Amazing.
And was looking to him to lead us, brother, in some of the stuff that we're doing. And this mayor's for guaranteed income is one of the best things that I ever been a part of. So shout out to him, man, for having the courage and foresight to doing this.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So I want to ask the first question for those who listening. Mike Tubbs, what is guaranteed income, first of all? What is that?
Guaranteed income, sorry if there's some background noise, I'm trying to get them to stop, but guaranteed income is as old as the country itself. Like Thomas Paine was talking about this in the 1700s. Dr. King called for this before he was assassinated.
That's right.
The idea is that in a country with so much wealth, no one should have nothing. In a country where some people have five houses, everyone should have their basic needs met. And to do that, it's just a reoccurring, regular cash disbursement with no strings attached. So I think the best example besides the work you're leading in Newark is the child tax credit, right, which was a guaranteed income for folks with children, or even the stimulus checks, which was a guaranteed income once a quarter to everyone making 75K or less. So it's exciting because thanks to your leadership and others, there's like, it's not a crazy idea anymore. Like it's becoming more mainstream, which makes sense because so many people are working incredibly hard and still can't pay rent and still can't pay for groceries and still can't pay for diapers.
That's right.
Definitely
That's
true. Right. All right. So I know there's a lot of discussion about guaranteed income and the universal basic income. Can either one of you just explain the difference between the two and why you thought? Okay. I'll let you explain, Mayor Tubbs. Can you just explain the difference between UBI and GI? Because some folks are a little confused about that one.
Yeah, I think universal basic income is the idea that everyone from Elon Musk to the person with nothing, or no money, should get a regular reoccurring payment from the government. That's just a part of being an American. That's just what it means to be American. And guaranteed income says that, well, I mean, maybe one day we'll get to everyone, but let's make sure today we get to the people who need it, right? Right? Like, I think that's, for me, that's the big difference. We still don't have universal health care in this country. So I think just politically, universality is going to be a little bit more difficult to get to than like just a guaranteed. So like, hey, even if you don't have to be Elon Musk, but if you need it, you got it. And I think that's the biggest difference. Although for me, I need to do a better job of it, but I do use it interchangeably because I know a lot of people are really passionate about universal basic income. And I'm like, well, the first step to universality is getting it to some people. So let's start with this guarantee and then we'll put off from there.
Yeah.
Right. And like, starting with guarantees.
We're not Qatar. They give money to everybody.
Qatar.
Oh,
okay,
yeah,
okay, wow. But I think we got
to
start it off first, you know, with the guaranteed income. Make it a little more palatable before everybody can get it, right?
That's right. I agree with that 100%. Yep. So what inspired you to do this, Mayor? What inspired you to make this happen?
Well, Mayor, as you know, Newark and Stockton are actually very, very similar in a lot of ways, from sort of population size to some of the history to some of the challenges to some of the opportunity to the proximity to these. You guys have done a better job of reaping some benefits of it, but just proximity to like huge wealth creating enclaves not too far away. Like we're only an hour away or an hour and a half away from Silicon Valley,
right?
Et cetera. So I've always struggled with why there are so many people in poverty. And having grown up in poverty, I realized that my folks in Stockton who were struggling weren't struggling because they were dumb or struggling because they didn't work hard or struggling because they had nothing to offer. Right. And I thought like we're missing so much as a city because so many people are living hand to mouth. We're missing so much as a city because so many parents are stressed and anxious. So I remember my first, like, you know, everybody has their first 100 days. So my first 100 days, I got my staff together and I said, what's the most radical thing we could do to end poverty? They're like, what you mean? And I was like, don't give me a program, like give me a policy. And I said, even if we can't do it for everyone, let's just test something. Cause I would hate for the next mayor or the mayor after that, or the mayor after that, talking about the same stuff we talking about. Cause I'm talking about the same stuff the mayors before me was talking about. And they came back with this idea of a guaranteed income. And at first even me, I was like, how are we gonna get this through my count? Like, I was trying to think, Then luckily, there's a group called the Economic Security Project that had, I was looking for a city to pilot in. I know at the same time, Mayor, you were doing your task force, talk about and discussing the issue. So we're lucky in that we found a philanthropic partner to say, hey, we can't get to everyone, but can we at least test this idea so that we have something to offer to the state government and the federal government? Like, look, if I could deficit spend, I would, but I have to balance my budget. So I may not have, I will never have the resources to get a guaranteed income to everyone in poverty in Stockton, but federal government and state government, you guys can. federal government can, state government, you get a lot closer. So that's sort of why we did it. And also, Maren, and I think as much of the work you do, not just in politics, but just in narrative, like, I'm just so tired of being in meetings and hearing people talk about poor people or people without money.
Yeah.
It just seems so different from what I knew. And it was in every meeting. Like, and I was like, that's not the truth. Every conversation on every issue, from education to housing, it was always this narrative that for some reason people had less money because they were less capable. I was like, let's prove that. Let's test it.
I'm wrong,
but I want to see, like, if we give these folks money, is the city going to get worse? If we give these folks money, is unemployment really going to increase? And I'm so tired of all the noise that wasn't rooted in what was real.
Right. Were you surprised that so many mayors jumped on quickly like that?
I mean, not the first 11, because y'all were like the real mayor. y'all the mayors are all the, when I say real mayors, you guys were the mayors who take hits all the time, who aren't in office to be something, but to do something. So like the first 11 to 20, I was like, these are the folks that's gonna do it anyway. These are the folks that's really gonna try to figure something out. I have been shocked though since that initial wave of all these other mayors and cities who are doing it, even cities where the mayor rotates. So the whole council has to agree. I have been shocked at how quickly it's grown from the original founding mayors like you. And also I've been very shocked about how it's no longer as politically risky as it was just 2 years ago.
Yeah, that's,
like
that's
now cool. People are getting petitioned for not doing it. Or now you got people coming to your office, bro, like, what about me? Like, you gave these 400 people. It's weird that it went from people being upset when we talked about 2017 to now in 2022, people are mad if they're not getting it. They're like, what about me? Do you see me? I'm struggling. It would really help.
That's really
inspiring.
Yeah. Last one I have, then you can jump right in. Just any stories that you have from any of the recipients that stands out the most to you?
Yeah, I mean, there's one brother we use all the time named Tomas, and this story stands out to me for a couple reasons. A, when he talks about how he's been able to be a father, and B, because he taught me something I didn't know, even though I thought I knew a lot. So I was interviewing him. It was our first public event before even the data was out. It was like 6 months in. Let's talk what was happening. And I interviewed him, and I said, what did you do with your guaranteed income? And he was like, oh, I interviewed. And I was like, I looked at him. And I was like, in my head, I was like, people say they're going to do dumb things with their money. Why would you pay $500 for an interview? That's clearly a scam. That's what's going in my head. So I'm like, you paid $500 for an interview? And he's like, oh, no, I work part-time, so I don't have paid time off. Or I work hourly, so I don't have paid time off. So there's jobs I've been qualified for I can never go to because I can't risk missing a day of work because I need that money. But the guaranteed income allowed me to take a day off to interview. And now I have a full-time job with benefits. And I was like,
that's amazing.
It shook me.
Yeah, that's major.
But that didn't come to mind as something people would do, right? That makes sense to me, right? Like, it's already so many people locked in jobs that pay less, but they can't afford the risk of applying for something they qualify for, which is wild. And then as a father, he talks about how, like, he knows his kids. Before, he just worked so hard. Like, he was like, I didn't know what my kids liked. He said, but now I know my daughter likes science. So on the weekends, I take her to the aquarium. Last month, I bought her a telescope. Like, all these things he's doing, like, as a dad. He's like, I know my kids. Not only do I know them, I'm able to provide for them. And for me, that just, like, wrecks me. Because, like, how many folks have the capacity to be brilliant parents but just don't have the time or the resources?
Yeah, that's true. Amazing.
That's true. That's amazing. So, Mary, one of the things you mentioned, you said that the guaranteed income program is not as politically risky. I wanted to ask, do you think that the pandemic and stimulus checks may have made it a little more palatable for folks to kind of get on board with this?
Yeah, I mean, I knew we were up to something when the last president, remember he stopped printing of checks because he said, I want my signature on them?
Yeah.
You remember that? He said, listen, he said, wait a minute, before y'all send this free money, I want them to know it came from me. And I'm like, that's what I knew. I said, okay, like the Republican president's like, we're not even sending checks out until people know it's me. And that's my record. But I think the pandemic showed us how, like, you can work as hard as you want to make all the right decisions, but our economy just hasn't been working for everyone.
Right.
So I think the pandemic, and then like, people protest everything. People protest elections, people protest like democracy. No one protest, even the January 6th people, they're protesting checks. None of them came to the Capitol, burned them checks. Like, they were mad about everything else, mad about democracy. Kept that $750.
Right.
Like, look, like, this is all right with me.
All right, so guaranteed income is definitely currently helping to offset, you know, not only the financial burden of inflation, but it's helped people to live a more financially balanced life now, right? Because it's a little extra money in folks' pockets. So, Mr. Tubbs, in your honest opinion, do you think this is an initiative that will eventually become federally instituted? Because that's the biggest issue right now is the funding behind this program, right? To expand it.
I think we're all doing this work because it has to become a policy. Mm-hmm. And we know it's going to take time, but we also know that a lot of the New Deal programs, Social Security, Medicare, before the Great Depression did not exist. It was a crisis that necessitated. But it's going to take like organizing. I think the child tax credit is a huge start. Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry, I have to run, but we should do this again with more time. I just promised my wife I would be on time.
Yeah. We don't want to be responsible.
But thank you so much.
I appreciate you, man. Love you for coming on, man. Period. Keep up the great work you're doing in California. Enjoy the weather, brother. Because we cold.
Thank you, Bear. See you soon.
Yeah. Thank you. Right.
Thank you.
So we have Kevin Callahan that's coming up next, right?
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, we want to continue the topic of guaranteed income. We want to thank Mayor Michael Tubbs for coming out and being on this podcast with us via virtual reality there. We appreciate it. Our next guest is Kevin Callahan, Newark's philanthropic liaison and program manager, was going to be here, Kalina Berryman. So we probably have, after that, we'll have somebody else who will talk more about their experience in this. So I want to shout out Kevin Callahan, thank him for being here, and bring him right on in. Let's get right into it. For those who might not know, what is the Newark Movement for Economic Equity? Just who did we target for this program, and what exactly is the Newark Movement for Economic Equity?
Sure, thanks for having me. So the Newark Movement for Economic Equity is one of the largest guaranteed income pilots in the country. We are serving 430 residents in two groups. We're serving a first 30 in a pilot cohort, and then we're serving 400 as part of Mayors for Guaranteed Income and their official research project, which is under the Center for Guaranteed Income at University of Pennsylvania. And the real mission and idea behind this is that we want to show the country and the world that people need more unrestricted cash in their hands, that the economy is not working for them right now. We can use Newark as a site that can really tell that story and spread that message around the state and the country. And in terms of who's in the pilot, anybody in Newark was eligible to join. The only restrictions that we had on there was they had to be 18 years old, they had to live here, they had to be somehow impacted or affected by COVID, which was basically everybody.
Right.
We spread it around the ward, so we tried to have equal representation of people around the ward. So that's the movement that we have, and we're a year in.
Nice.
Nice.
And, I know it's still a little early, but what is the data showing so far? Do we have any information?
We do. So we've had our first round of data come out. The Center for Guaranteed Income Research with an organization called Stanford Basic Income Lab have a data dashboard online now. So you can go on this data dashboard and see around the country how people are spending money. In Newark, we see something similar to what is happening in the rest of the country, which is that people are spending this on basic needs. Just really what we said and what we thought would happen. They're not wasting the money. They're not spending it on unnecessary things. They're using it for food, about 25, 26% food, about 42% in retail stores, which is also food, clothing, things for the family. 10% on healthcare, about 10% on transportation. So it's really what we thought, that people just need this as a buffer to stabilize their lives and really just as an income floor so that they can start to think bigger about what they're able to do in their own lives and make ends meet.
All right.
That's great.
All right. Did you want to add something, Mayor, or you were good?
No, go ahead.
Okay. So you did mention that the data, what the data showed, but what were some of the most common misconceptions that you may have heard before the data came out about the results of what the money was spent on?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is people are going to waste the money. People aren't going to know what to do with it. Mm-hmm. Shouldn't these people have all kinds of counseling and financial coaching, and they're not possibly going to be able to figure out how to, you know, use this money or save this money or prioritize this money themselves? You know, what kind of other support are we putting in? You know, this isn't something that's sustainable. We can't possibly make this happen or do it. So I think there was really a lot of skepticism, particularly early on when the mayor first wanted to do this in 2019. There was even more skepticism. I think with the events that happened with COVID, people started to see all of a sudden now that their neighbors were at the food bank and people that they knew and recognized were at the food bank and unemployed and in need of help and support. I think that started to change some minds, but I think we still have this narrative that if you don't work full-time, or if you don't work three jobs, or if you're not killing yourself and you can't see your family because you're working so many hours, you don't deserve to you know, to live a good life or be financially stable. And that's really what we're pushing back against.
Right.
So I know there's different disbursements. What does that look like, and why did we decide to disperse money differently like that?
Sure. So we have two levels. 200 people are receiving two payments a month, $250 a payment. And 200 people are receiving two lump sums of $3,000. So everybody gets $6,000 a year for 2 years. And really what we wanted to see was if people were gonna make different decisions. Because again, we're trying to inform policy, state policy, federal policy. So what we wanna see is, are people who are receiving the lump sums of $3,000 deciding differently how they spend their money? Maybe they're putting it towards a training program or buying a car or doing something that maybe they can't do with those monthly payments of $250. Or what is the saving variation? Or how can we inform policy as we think about EITC, child tax credit, other things?
Right.
What is that amount we wanna see, and what is that frequency we wanna see?
Right. That's great. Mm-hmm. And who's measuring this for us?
So as the Center for Guaranteed Income Research, they manage the application process. They decided the participants who applied through their portal, and they're doing twice a year surveys. So every 6 months, every participant completes a very detailed survey. And then we have 400 people in a control group who also complete a survey and are compensated with a gift card. And so this is a full research study, and we'll be able to report on their results at the end of this 2 years when people can really state how they feel, physical health, mental health, et cetera.
Nice.
All right. Yeah. How was it funded? You mentioned how the cash payments are dispersed, but how was this program funded?
So this is a public-private partnership. You know, this is private funds started. So we brought private funds to bear to initially make this happen, close to $2.5 million in private funds. And then when the American Rescue Plan Act was passed under the Biden administration, the mayor dedicated $3.8 million of that. So altogether, this is about a $6.2, $6.3 million project, part federal funds and part private funds from foundations in New Jersey and a couple national.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah, that's it's just a great story.
Yeah.
So what are some of the most memorable? I asked Mayor Tubbs this, so I'm gonna throw it at you. What was one of the most memorable stories that you heard from some of the participants that you can reveal on the show for us?
Sure. So, I mean, I think, you know, we'll have a participant joining us who was just telling me her story, which is incredible. I think, you know, another participant that we met is, someone about to go to college, trying to figure out how to have a place to live, doesn't necessarily want to live at home, and just trying to bridge that gap, get a new beginning. You know, so he's talking about how he's able to afford his own apartment, go to school, get his life on the right path because of this program. We have a participant who was in a coma because of COVID.
Wow.
Came out of the coma, found out they were in the program, really using it to put their life back together. So you just hear these stories of people who are really struggling, you know, wherever they are in their life, and this program is having a huge impact on them.
Wow.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that is.
Yeah.
All right. So you have anything you want to add, Mayor, to that? Or?
No, go ahead.
Okay. So what is next? What is the future of the Guaranteed Income Program here in Newark? What does the future of this program look like?
So the future is really to convince state leaders, federal leaders, that this is a policy we need in America. And so the mayor was always clear that we can't continue, that no city can continue this on its own. The scale is just too huge. We need state resources, and most importantly, we need federal resources. We know the federal government is able to send out money at various occasions. We saw the effect that the child tax credit had, that's now lapsed, but just like cutting in half child poverty. So there's all this evidence base of what this cash makes, how this cash makes a difference in people's lives. And so what we're telling the state and federal government is this is a policy we need. We need this in perpetuity, not just for 2 years, not just pilots, but we really need it. And so we're going to be on an advocacy push, and we're going to be using our storytellers and our pilot and the mayor's leadership and, you know, to really push this on a state and federal level.
Right. Yeah, it's really expensive. $6 million, right?
Just for 400 people.
Just for 400 people.
Yeah.
And our population is a lot more than 400 people just in the city. So, all right. I think that's all of the questions I had. You have anything else, Mayor?
No, just the data itself, like the data that we have, what's going to happen with the data, and what do you think success looks like for us?
So the full data will be out probably not until about 2024 by the time they finish the two-year pilot and then analyze everything. I think success really looks like, number one, the effect on the people and what we think that would translate to if this were a policy more broadly. And so we want to see improved mental health, improved physical health, improved financial health. We want to see people more trusting of government, more trusting of each other, more involved in their communities, better employment opportunities, et cetera. So when we're reading the surveys, I think those are really the results that we want to see from people and the narrative that we want to be pushing nationally. And obviously we want to see Newarkers who have benefited from this program and who have made a difference in their own lives and you know, really benefited from this and stabilized themselves.
Absolutely, yeah. All right.
That's great. We thank you, Kevin, and what you're doing, being on the show with us today. You know, thanks a lot. Let's stay at it. I know we have Chamonique Jones coming up next.
Yes.
Yep.
Who is a participant, right?
Yes. So, Kevin, if you want to stay here with Chamonique on, or if you want to leave, it's up to you. You want to stay? All right, let's bring Chamonique on.
Thank you, Chamonique, for joining us on the show today. We appreciate you being here with us on Razz and 60. Want to tell us a little about yourself before we get into this and your reaction when you found out you was part of the program.
My name is Chamonique Jones. I was born and raised in Newark, West Ward. Grew up in the Ivy Hill section of Newark. I'm the oldest of three. Both of my parents are community advocates. I would consider myself a mentor slash maybe advocate activist. I'm a mother. I'm in the process of almost being an author. I'm writing a book called My Village is North Strong. I'm a community baby. I grew up in this community raised me. I love my city. Holding the line and filling in the gap is things that's been echoed in me since I was a child. So I'm a community baby. My first reaction was blessed. Blessed to be chosen. You know, anybody could have been chosen. I was in a rough place when I got the phone call. I wrote that I was sick and I was dealing with some things. And this thing kind of was like full circle for me, because the community that I lived for, that I gave so much to as a kid, community service, was given back to me when I was in a rough space. So I was definitely blessed. It was a level of gratitude, grateful, and happy, of course.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just if you feel like talking to us about a little bit, what were you able to do that you couldn't do before you were getting these payments?
Well, I'm a mother of four. And the pandemic hit me hard, so I didn't get stimulus like everyone else because I was sick and I wasn't able to work prior to. So right before I got the check, I was actually denied from Social Security for like the third time. So we didn't know what we were going to do for Christmas. We didn't know what the holidays was going to look like. I wasn't sure, you know, how I was going to make ends meet. So the first check actually used towards paying some pre-existing debt. And also used it towards the holidays, Christmas, and uniforms for my kids.
Oh, wow.
This is the third check just hit on Friday. So the second one, I used to pay off my college tuition. So I owe $1,500. So I'm actually able to go back to school now and finish my degree, something that I wasn't able to do before. And wow. I was able to pay for my editor to help with the book, help with the writing the book process. So that helped me. And then this last one, we're starting a nonprofit called Destiny Unleashed, and we're doing a brunch, a brotherhood brunch called Position for Purpose. So that's what this money is going to go towards, like giving back. So it really helped us, really helped me, really helped my family.
That's good stuff.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah. I mean, you're able to not only help with your family, help pay off your debts for school, but you're even giving back. That just shows how much gratitude you have for this program. You're giving back to the community, you know? That's amazing. So, I mean, you pretty much answered the question I was going to ask you. What personal goals did this help you achieve? And you pretty much answered it. I do want to ask, do you believe a program such as Guaranteed Income is something that should be permanent? Do you think that this is something that can help people, you know, along a broader spectrum, more people should be able to receive these payments?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think even if you look at the economy, you know, for me, I wasn't able to find a job. Mm-hmm. I've been looking and searching. So I was sharing with Kevin that, you know, my back was up against the wall and I didn't know how I was going to make ends meet. So even this Friday, I'm like, does it come Thursday or does it come Friday? Because I have four kids and they're not biologically mine. They're my four God kids. But it speaks about like when I was talking about holding a line. When I thought about when the money came for me, it was for four kids that I'm taking care of that are not mine, but they're worthy to be taken care of. So this program helps people like myself, you know, who might not be eligible for Social Security, but might not be in a position to work yet. And it just, you know, I'm grateful. And I think that so many others would benefit from it.
Absolutely. May you have anything you want to add?
Yeah, I mean, you know, just, you know, thinking about what it would take to make this program permanent, you know, around the country and around the state. Do you think people would be interested in being a part of a broader economic equity movement like this?
I definitely do. I just think that people need to know that it's real. So even if you look, my story was shared, and I saw a lot of comments where people are like, no way. Mm-hmm. But it's a real program. Yeah. And I really been, you know, let me tell you, I wanted to check the hit. So I was a little confused, like this is too good to be true, but I'm a believer. So because I'm a believer, I was like, you know, let the blessings come. The Bible says we have not because we ask not. So I think that it would definitely benefit a lot of people if they knew that it really existed and it's really a real program.
Right.
This is not no show story. This is a real story. This program changed our lives. What I thought would be the coldest winter ever, it wasn't.
That's great. Mm-hmm. I don't know what else to say after that.
I think that's a mic drop right there. Yeah, she did good.
Mm-hmm. Threw Sister Soulja up in there with us. You know, coldest winter ever. But that's great, and it's great to hear. We just got off of Michael Tubbs, you know, Mayors for Guarantee Income around the nation. So, you know, these stories will help us put pressure on the state and federal government to make this something that happens in perpetuity. Your story, definitely, Dominique, will add to that, you know, definitely will add to that. But that's all I have. You know, she was very succinct and clear.
Very clear.
Now, I appreciate that.
All right. Can we get a photo with the two of you and the mayor?
Yeah.
Sure.
Just want to thank our guests for making this another great show. Thank to Michael Tubbs, Kevin Callahan, Chamonix Jones sharing her story. Thank everybody for listening, for being out there with us today. Make sure you share this episode link and all other episodes of Razzin 60 with your social circle. This was a very, very, very important episode today. It's going to help millions of people if we get it out and do the right thing. So please share it as much as you possibly can. And the solution to poverty is to abolish it directly by a now widely discussed measure, the guaranteed income. That's Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. God bless y'all. Godspeed.
Thank you.